concept in Judaism.
Yeah, yeah.
Ryan?
Yeah, let's get started. Pepra? Okay. I'm glad we...
Pepra?
Okay. I just want to say that I think it's very important, the topic... Pepra? Okay. Today's topic, I think, is an important one, and one that something tells me if you have not yet dealt with this in your life, in your next stages of life, you will deal with all sorts of Jews from all over the place. And today we're going to want to at least start with the question of how does halakha approach non-Orthodox, other denominational Jews? This morning with Rav Berman, hopefully we at least got a sense of the differences, or at least the directions that other denominations are going in. There's always a lot more to talk about. I don't know how, you know, did we, you know, and you know, the first time you meet a renewal Jew, a reconstruction Jew, is always a fun experience. But the hope is at least we have some sort of a framework to how we deal with things. Okay, I want to shift from what are other denominations to how we relate to them. And guys, I'm going to ask everyone to keep all conversations at bay. We're in the Beit Midrash. Let's get started. As my minhag is always, whenever we talk about anything having to do with anything, we always start off with a pen story. Okay, so let's get started. I just want to give everyone a picture. One of the things that I did in my job at University of Pennsylvania was give tours. You give tours to donors, you give tours to board members, and to like big visiting rabbis and presidents of the OU and stuff like that. So my tour was always really fun because I would always take them to the second floor of Penn Hillel, and there was always a reaction. Let me explain. You walk on the second floor, and I would always say to them like this: on our right side is the auditorium. This is a beautiful auditorium. We do lots of stuff, and we have lots of speakers, including this is where the Orthodox Minyan meets, because the Orthodox Minyan on Shabbat is too big to fit into the Beit Midrash upstairs. So we fit 200 to 300 people in this room over here in the Orthodox Minyan Friday night and Shabbat day. Beautiful. Can you? And then on the left is the library. The library is a wonderful building with a wonderful, wonderful svar. And in here on Shabbat is the Reform services on Shabbat, right across the hall. Upstairs is the Beit Midrash. That is a beautiful Beit Midrash that... What can I do? It's a beautiful Beit Midrash with definitely at least as many Sfarim as we have here. Yeah? Maybe more? Because I spent more money on it than we spent here. Okay? The minhag at Penn when I was there was minimum $1,000 spending every year at the YU Sfarim sale. That minhag's been going on, hopefully to continue. So we have a lot of great Sfarim. Including a list that I gave them before I came, that I won't come unless you have the following, because otherwise I have to schlep them and I have room. So basically, upstairs in the beautiful Beit Midrash that you saw, that's where the conservative minyan meets on Friday and Shabbat. And it would always be one of two reactions. Reaction number one was, oh my God, I've never seen another model anywhere else in any other country where you have three different services getting along in the same building, right across from each other. Oh, and we also time it so we all end at the same time, so we can all go downstairs and make kiddush and eat together. Oh my God, this is the most beautiful spirit of unity and inclusivity. This is the most beautiful thing we've ever seen. I'll call that reaction one. Reaction two is a reaction of horror. It's the reaction of, wait, you let them daven in your Beit Midrash? Sorry, pray in your Beit Midrash? You let them use the Sifrei Torah? What? Wait a second. Do you mean to tell me that Friday night, while you guys are davening B'Kedushav Tara, them over there have musical instruments, and you're all praying at the same time? Does everyone hear the two opposite and unequal reactions? Okay? We had this Sefer Torah on display. It was a puzzle Sefer Torah that was saved from the Holocaust, and it's kind of on display right outside the library. It was always fun to see which of our guests would turn it and move it away from the library so it doesn't see what's going on inside. Everyone's got their own sticks. Okay, but everyone understand the point? Fundamentally, we start off already with very different possible attitudes towards how we look at the non-Orthodox minyanim services religion. And at this point, let's ask a couple questions. I want to know fundamentally, how do we feel about non-Orthodox Jews and non-Orthodox Judaism? Now, obviously, there are going to be lots of distinctions, conservative, reform, reconstruction, renewal, etc. But I want to at least try to get some basic rules. How do we look at them as a religion? Are we interested in them doing well in life? Or are we like, you know, when Rav Berman was giving statistics, and they're like, yay, these services are closing, and they're failing, and their numbers were once here, and now they're here. Are we like cheering and saying yay? And like saying yay, let's say Kaddish together, but like the Kaddish we say at the end of Yom Kippur, we're dancing while we're saying Kaddish? Or are we like really saying Kaddish, like as if someone, we just lost, God forbid, a relative, and we're crying when we say that Kaddish? How are we saying Kaddish? How are we relating to non-Orthodox Jews to non-Orthodox Judaism? When I take out a sefer, and we have svarim in this Beit Midrash by conservative rabbis. Okay? A couple of you have them at your muckle. Okay? Jastro from Philadelphia. Tosefta Kipshuta over there are all conservative rabbis. Okay? There's probably a few more. We won't go into them now. Everyone understand? How do I handle their Torah? How do I look at them and their religious rites? Gentlemen, you're invited, okay, we'll call that on the fundamental level. We also have to deal with lots of issues, either now or towards the end of the year as we start Union College prep. How do I deal with actual realities of, can I go into a conservative reform, renewal, partnership, shul? Can I daven there? Can I daven there with their minyan? Can I daven there with our own minyan? What happens when I get invited to a bar mitzvah or a wedding of a family member? Okay, the opposite way. Can I get an aliyah? I have an Orthodox shul, and there is a visiting member, very rich and wealthy member, or not a member, a cousin of a member, and he's going to give a big donation. Can I give him an aliyah for Kriyat HaTorah? Okay? In other words, how do I deal with when the worlds actually come together, both practically and fundamentally? Okay? Again, what happens when I go there? What happens when they come to visit us? And again, what do I want? What are my goals? What are my aspirations, etc.? Everybody good where we're going today? Okay, and our goal will be to try to create two very different approaches. I'm going to call it the approach of Moshe Feinstein, as opposed to the approach of Rav Soloveitchik. You can also call it approaches of, we could probably say a more Haredi approach, more modern Orthodox approach, but I have a feeling that not all Haredim agree with that, not all modern Orthodox agree with that. So we'll just go for Moshe in the room. Yeah, yes? Let's get started. I gave everybody a bunch of basic terminology, Makorot and the Rambam. Not going to go through all of them, but let's just start off. Based on what you learned with Rav Berman this morning, where does conservative reform Jews live?
Of course.
Like, if we start off with number one, Rambam says, equates who and who? Someone who's Machal Shabbat Beparhesia, which means someone who publicly doesn't care less about Shabbat and violates the laws of Shabbat publicly, okay? On campus, for example, you'll see the people, again, it's not Chil Shabbat, but, the kid who walks around with his phone, or once upon a time, they used to have these things like called Walkmans and like all these other devices people used to use to listen to things. Now we just have phones with earplugs. So you have one earplug tucked in under the shirt so no one can see. So this way you can, God forbid, not listen to music or something else while even though it's Shabbat. Or are you wearing, who's here got those big earphones that everybody can see you a mile away, right? Are you wearing those publicly on Shabbat? What's the public statement? What's Befarhesia? Okay? Someone who says, I couldn't care less. Someone who commits Avodah Zarah, Mechalel Shabbat Befarhesia, are the same. And Rambam uses what terminology to describe them? Before that, look at what does he say? Einam ki Yisrael. What are they not?
They're not Jews.
They're not like Jews. Did Rambam say it somewhere else even stronger? Anyone? Did Rambam say it somewhere stronger?
He also
says it, ready, look at the end of source 2. Ki goyim lechol divrayim. Rambam calls them like goyim. This isn't Judaism. And you know what happens if it's not Judaism? Again, I'm not here to say that. Just saying, right now, Zach, we're not Jews. In other words, this is a different religion. It's just not ours. So I might love religion, says Rambam. I'll read about religions. I'll visit them. Just like I'll visit the Amish, I'll visit them.
But he says ain't that too.
Judaism. Sorry?
He says things against that too. He says you can't talk to them.
Exactly. Says Rambam. Let's put it this way. If you're not Jews, I'm going to treat you just like all other non-Jews. And I don't want anything to do with you. I'm not interested in a relationship. You have nothing to offer me. I've got nothing to offer you. Wait, do I want tshuva?
No.
No! Not even Kirov. Okay? You can tell Chabad. No worries. Don't ask them to put on tefillin. Don't care about them. Just like you don't care about Goyim. Okay, by the way, Chabad will say no. They should do seven mitzvot also. So we'll leave that aside. But don't care about them. Everybody follow the Rambam? They're not Jews. It's not Judaism. They're not Jews. Leave them alone. Yes? Everyone should see where we're coming from? Rambam Rashi talks about Mechal Shabbat Farhesia, because again, you don't keep Shabbat, you drive on Shabbat, right? The official psak in the 1920s in the conservative movement, you don't keep Shabbat, you're done, right? Sorry, conservative movement feels it would be done. No one would come to shul. Therefore, what do we say? Yalla, we have the entire movement that doesn't keep Shabbat but Farhesia. They proudly go to shul, the parking lot's open. Are there Orthodox shuls and Chabad shuls that have people that drive? Yes. Do they close the parking lot officially? Most probably. People park a block or two away. Seder, we'll get there. That tells me it's not Mechal Shabbos Farhesia. Okay? But this is a movement that embraces. This is a movement, give me a second just to finish Rambam. Rambam talks about apikorsin and kofrin, right? Biblical criticism. Denial of God having nevuah. Denial of divinity of Torah. Denial of Torah Shabbat Peh. Yes? Does Reform fit into those categories?
Yep.
Anyone that says the Torah has been batel, says Rambam, is a kofar and apikorsist. Yes? You know what we do to them? All right, I want to answer that question. But you know what their status is, yes? We're all good? That's correct. And that's one of those things. Lo matargument. Yeah. Everyone follow where we are in Rambam? I'm going to call Rambam a classic approach. You're not Jewish. It ain't Judaism. Don't pretend. Stop playing games. We're not living in a world of PC. We're living in a world of truth. In that world of truth, you're not Jews, it ain't Judaism, deal with it. So far, so good? Just present, again, Rambam didn't meet Reform conservative Jews. Wait a second, there's one glimmer of hope, let me just finish Rambam for a second. There's one glimmer of hope in Rambam, and that is source number 5. Anyone that saw, the Rambam has a very, very important category called Tinoch Shenishba. And the category works like this. If I am a Reform rabbi, conservative rabbi, and I went to JTS, and I studied Gemara, and I know what halacha is, and I've met Orthodox Jews, and I still don't do it, at least I know about it. I've made a choice. We hold you responsible for choices. But, if you're born into it, okay, you are born into a Karaite family. Okay, that's the reality the Rambam's dealing with. Now let's be honest. You look at your parents, they look from. Okay? You look at them, they're a beautiful from role model. Karaites have different halakha than we do. They relate to Torah differently. But they look from to you. Says Rambam, you're like a tinok shenishba. You're a child, a baby, that was taken captive. And guess what that means, says Rambam? You don't know better. And guess what? In halakha, Rambam calls it ones. You were taken by force. How can I hold you accountable if you didn't know better? And that for Rambam was going to be a glimmer of hope. Okay? What do I do with someone who grew up Reform? Okay, I've told the story before. I'll say it again. But I will first pause the recorder. Okay. Rav Moshe Feinstein. So we've presented ABCs. Bear in mind, any approach has to handle and deal with these questions and keep them in the background. Rav Moshe Feinstein is our seminal posek in America. At the moment, the war against Reform and Conservative, once it leaves Germany, or it literally gets killed out of Germany, it now picks up in America. Okay? Just to give you a sense of where we are, we're now in the 1960s. The 1960s in America looks like this. The 40s and the 50s is a fight for survival of Jewry after the Holocaust. Yes? The 1960s is about denominational identity and who is going to be who in America. Okay, the big war is over the Mechitza. We're all fought in the 1960s. Okay? Rav Moshe Feinstein is a major player in the differences between Orthodox, Reform, and Conservative, and so is the Rav. Both of them do not agree with each other. With that, let's get started. We're going to read a little of Rav Moshe. I'm going to ask you to embrace his sharpness. Ready? Everyone, let's get started. I'm starting. We're in source number 7. We're going to read paragraph 2. Hinei b'davar shemuchrach b'shvil. Now, the best part about learning Rav Moshe is figuring out his Hebrew words. And the best part of his Hebrew words is his spelling. And for all those of you that think, oh, don't worry, we'll just compare it to a different place, don't worry. Rav Moshe spells it differently every single place he uses it. So, let's get started. Everyone look at the first word. Bishvil ha?
Campaign.
Linyanei?
Banquet.
Eretz Yisrael. Li'irgun, thank you. Banquet. So I've got a campaign, Israel, banquet. What's going on? The 1960s?
JNF
dinners, Israeli bond dinners. Now, what's the question? Steer of Moshe Feinstein, we here on the Lower East Side, good Jews, are having a JNF Bonds of Israel dinner. Can we ulazmin gam et rabbis? Now, by the way, Rav Moshe only writes it out as rabbis when it is not rabbanim. And when he's saying rabbis, he's with that intonation. Okay? Anyhow, shel ha
reformer,
that's from the German. Ve, there you go. That one, that's, you know, you can, okay, good. Begam lechaber otam bekibudim shonen. Says Rav Moshe, here's the situation. We're having a dinner to buy Israeli bonds. We're having a dinner to help the state of Israel. Now let's be honest. The Orthodox community, even the Lower East Side at the time, is still pretty small. But you know what? There's a multiple and richer non-Orthodox communities and shuls. Can we team up and join forces for the sake of raising money for Eretz Yisrael? Okay, if you want, I can push it. I can't say it's Pikuach Nefesh for Israel, but this is such a beautiful thing. Am I allowed to invite those Kofrim and Apikorsim, Machalei Shabbos Bevarasya, and their rabbis to a dinner? Wait, says Rav Moshe, what am I offering? Can I ask them to do Hamotzi? Right, you guys know, like, maybe you've seen a big weddings or a bris, where you have these big challahs and someone does this whole like ceremony. Okay? Oh, or like, yeah, I hate to make, you're fine, I can make a comparison. Okay? Or can I give them a different kibbutz? Can I get them to do the, I don't know, but can I give them any kibbutz? Can I ask them to get up and give a speech? Can I ask them to make welcome remarks? Can I ask them to read Mizmor of Tehillim? I'm at the psalm. Can I ask them to get up and read it in Hebrew or in English for everybody? Everybody follow the question? Rav Moshe, in this question, or in his answer, will give us a very fundamental approach and attitude. Says Rav Moshe. Skip the next paragraph. Hinei laniyat dati. Everyone see it? Third paragraph, word number 7. Barur. It is clear. She'af im haya mevarech bracha kitkuna. Now, I need you to read this in the witty, sharp, insulting manner Rav Moshe meant it.
Even if they know how to read a bracha.
Even if they can actually read the bracha properly. Not mutilate the words and actually say it properly. Just bear in mind, again, we all in our heads have an image of a conservative reform rabbis.
So he seems to take it like a step further.
We get there. Ubelo hafsek l'achil anami. And they also know the halakha that you're not allowed to talk after you make a bracha, because the bracha relates to food. Says Rav Moshe, Kevan shekofer bat shemu v'torato, since he totally denies God and his Torah. Again, I'm only, Rav Moshe needs to be read contextually for the conservative rabbis in the 60s. Okay? How we apply the rules later on, that we have to do. But again, by definition, let me be really clear about this. Responsa literature is called a responsa, because it's a response to a time, place, and circumstance. To extend it to your circumstance requires applying intelligently, with common sense, all the details and factors. That's why every responsa has a date, who the letter is written to, and what city and country it comes from. Okay? Anyone who misuses that is simply misusing the genre. Anyway, what does he say? Hu kofer b'Hashem v'Torato, kirov a rabbi shalem. Like most of them. Again, Good. Next. Why? Now Rav Moshe goes further. Shenimsa shezkarat Hashem hu etzlo rak kedvarim ba'alma. You know, when they say that word God, Hashem, whatever it is, it's like saying rock, or God with a lowercase. Or it's like saying the name, I don't know, give me a name, Ernest. It's just a name. It doesn't mean anything to them. Okay? Yeah. There's a different one in my head. I just can't get it out. Ein zeh b'shem brought bircha klal. It's not a bracha. V'hu kibelo shem malchu klal. As if they said, baruch hamotzei lachem al haaretz. Just to be clear. What's Rav Moshe's opinion about the religious act of someone who's not Orthodox?
They mean nothing.
Worthless. Again, I'm taking Rav Moshe, we're applying Rambams, and Rav Moshe's coming to the following conclusion. One. Well, wait. Let's, what are the conclusions we learned from Rav Moshe? Give me big conclusions. When it comes to non-Orthodox Jews, yeah?
It's as if they don't believe in God.
They don't believe in God. They don't believe in Torah. Therefore, this ain't Judaism. Do I want them interacting with me?
No.
No. Do I want them at this dinner? No. Anything they do, is it of religious value?
No.
Everyone follow how I'm plugging in Rav Moshe? That's Rav Moshe. Now again, I'll balance Rav Moshe in a minute. But I need to everyone understand. I can't say this is a classic approach. This is the approach of Rav Moshe. This was the approach of Haredi Jewry from the 60s and off and on. But everyone understand it's a very simple application of the Rambam, of the Gemara, of Rashi. Yeah.
Or did he take the step of not interacting with them?
He said don't invite them. And in a few minutes, when we go further, he'll uninvite them to other things as well. Let me be real honest with you, Simcha. If I'm inviting you as the president of the Orthodox community, and yet I'm telling you to sit in the back and not talk, I'm basically not inviting you.
Well, he's saying religious practice.
Agreed. But I'm saying, if in order for me to invite a shul, and I tell the rabbi to come, and I don't give him a place in the bama, I don't give him a role, I'm basically uninviting him. Okay, that's the role of politics. Yeah.
Why does Rav Moshe apply almost half of the Rambam and not the
Rav?
Like,
oh, don't worry. Rav Moshe has six or seven other tshuvas. He's going to go further. For example,
he never goes as far as the Rambam is very extreme. He says he never talked to them, the greatness, but he killed them.
That's true. So you're right. First of all, so let's put it this way. The Chazon Ish, now it's, how is it? Agreed. Two pieces. The Chazon Ish will have neutralized one piece already, so we'll leave the Chazon Ish out with neutralizing the extremes. Rav Moshe, let's go one step further. Rav Moshe then goes in the next tshuva. What about giving an aliyah to a non-Orthodox person? Okay? Ready? Hold on. Story. There's a reason I don't take these things anymore. What does Rav Moshe say? Rav Moshe's asked, can you give him hagba? Can you give him glila? Can you give him tichat sefer Torah? Someone tell me what Rav Moshe's going to say.
No!
Because we don't let Ovdei Avodah Zarah do that stuff either. And even if they are gentlemen, even if they are nice, good people, chavra, we don't matir anything. You do not give them any position of kavod. By the way, look at paragraph 2 for 1 second. Aval. Paragraph 2 and number 8. Imhulet sarach gadol. Here's our big heter. If this is for a really big need, why? Sheesh lachush sheyavo lidei machloket beir. 1. It will cause World War 3. Okay? Or 2. Yesh lachush lehafsid staka. He's the guy who paid for your building. And he's going to unpay for it. Says Rav Moshe. Yesh lahatir bishar kibudim. Go ahead and give them other kibudim that do not involve God's name. Because an aliyah is part of services, and aliyah is saying Shem Hashem. He's being motzias and says, Rav Moshe, no way. Okay? I'll just continue for 2 seconds, and I need to get to the other side, but Rav Moshe will say this about non-Orthodox conversions, gets, and kiddushin. That being said, I need to, if we're going to do this job for real, within the world of Rav Moshe, there's a multiple different shuvot, reflecting different types of conservative rabbis at different points. And therefore, all I'm going to say when it comes to Rav Moshe is that conservative conversions and marriages require being checked out because there is a likelihood, potentially, and again, this is why it's going to depend on what generation we're talking about, that it may have been actually performed in a kosher mikvah with kosher rabbis. Also, could be Rabbi Berman spoke about this. There was a phenomenon of YU trained rabbis who became conservative rabbis. For those of you in Teaneck, just to give you a very quick mashal, the Jewish Center. Okay, everyone, just even if you don't know the place, just listen to the way the shul worked. The Jewish Center was the biggest conservative synagogue in Teaneck. When I grew up, there were 3 Orthodox shuls, 2 conservative shuls, 3 Reformed temples. Skip ahead till 2019. There's at least 25 Orthodox shuls. There's a half of a conservative shul, and there's 1 structure of a Reform shul. One of the Reform shuls is now a Jewish school and kindergarten. I don't think they have services. They do. Sadder than 2 or 1.5. I'm not sure about that because right now some of the shuls in Bergenfield are renting it.
People drive their cars there on Shabbat.
Okay, I take it back. So, Seder, 2. Guys, watch the story. Hold on, guys.
It actually might only be like Yom.
Okay, so it might be only Yom Noraim. I'll accept that. So, guys, 2. The Jewish Center, which is on East Cedar Lane, started off with 2 very big rabbis, Rabbi Feldman and Rabbi Roth. Multiple Rabbi Feldman's books can be found in the Beit Midrash and in the library. Rabbi Feldman's son, some of you might have had. He was in Frisch, he was in Mizrahi, in Cleveland. His oldest son is currently a YU Rosh Hashiva. His daughter and his own shul in Teaneck. His daughter was my sister's chavruta. How did it go? Rabbi Feldman's shul began in the basement of the conservative shul. At one point, that shul became more popular than the shul on top. And then they switched, which means the biggest conservative shul in Teaneck has a mechitza. Current rabbi is also a YU grad. Oh, they don't have a microwave? They don't have a microphone? They have a tzomet microphone. Ever since the beginning, they've always had a tzomet microphone. Again, Orthodox Judaism, we're not so into that. But, halachically, not violating Yisur. That being the case, everyone, and there's a kosher mikvah inside. Not for now. All I use as demonstration, guys, for how communities and things shift, and that we need to when we treat conservative Jews and rabbis, we need to treat them on case-by-case basis. Okay? Which means if there was a betin of 3 converts, 2 of their main rabbis are Orthodox Jews. That changes the halachot of get and kiddushin. Okay, everybody with me? But from a Moshe's perspective, nothing to talk about except with exception. Everybody good? Okay, I don't have as much time as I'd like. Let's keep going. Source number 9 is the Binyan Sion. I'm going to say the Binyan Sion outside, despite that the Binyan Sion is the source for anyone that disagrees with everything we've said until now. The Binyan Sion is Rav Yaakov Ettlinger. We're in the 19th century. He's the Rebbe of Rav Shimshon Lefala Hirsch. Again, I'm not going to call that modern orthodoxy, but I'll certainly call that the German model of orthodoxy. And Binyan Sion says like this, I don't know what to do with the non-orthodox Jews of my day because they are fundamentally different than the Kofrim and Apikorsim and the Mechalel Shabbos of yesteryear. And therefore, I don't know that all of our halakhic categories can still be applied. Why? And he says very simple. They go to shul, they daven with kavana, and then they drive home. Until now, the assumption has been, if you're Mechalel Shabbat Befarasya, yeah, you're spitting in God's face and you're saying, I don't care. But that's not true anymore. So then the categories don't fit, which means the halachot don't apply. Now what do I do? And that's the Binyan Sion. And that's the Binyan Sion when it comes to saying, wait, so how do we rethink about what the attitude towards non-Orthodox Jews can and should be? And basically, the earliest source, and certainly the strongest source, is either Tinoch Shenishpa or this Binyan Sion. The Binyan Sion just changes everything. Because he's saying, maybe we can't treat them the way we treated other people in the past. Good. Turn the page. Let's talk about the Rav. I'm really, really hoping that we got to read a lot. I gave you a whole bunch of pieces from the Rav. Rav Soloveitchik, for those that have not read the Rav, these are really some of my favorite pieces. I'll go in order. Can someone, like, Kol Dofek, have we all read it? Have we seen it at least? Okay, it is one of the seminal works of Soloveitchik, where he develops the concepts of two different covenants. Okay, there is the which one's which? There's Brit Mitzrayim and Brit Sinai. In Egypt, we have the Brit of what? Which one is it? Fate or destiny?
Fate.
All Jews left Mitzrayim together. That's what we'll call the Brit of unity of the Jewish people. And there's Brit Sinai. There's a Brit of Torah. The Brit of destiny. Judaism is both. Ideal Judaism needs both. Someone that only focuses on the nationhood and spits at the religion, bad. Someone that only focuses on religion and spits on the nation, just as bad. Yes? Great. But what happens when I have that? The Rav, by the way, then tells you he's got a great vort about gerus. What's gerus? Conversion. You do both, right? You accept Torah and mitzvot, you accept Brit Sinai, and you also accept the goral of the avot. You tie yourself to the nation with Brit Milah. Every conversion has both. Every Jew needs both. Says the Rav, what do? When for the first time in Jewish history, we have people that only have one. We have on the one hand, Jews that are, their fate is of Jews. Hitler killed them just like anybody else. They call themselves Jews, they worship in temples and in synagogues. But yet, they don't deal with Brit Sinai, because from their perspective, there was no Sinai. The first time in Jewish history where we have a split. Bear in mind, the Rav is just as critical about Jews who focus on Sinai and think that all other Jews are dead. Right? One of them, I remember Dr. Lamb giving a speech where he turned to the Satmar Rebbe, who he seemed to have been close with at that point, and said, "Would you count me in a minyan?" And the Satmar Rebbe said to him, "That's a very difficult question." That's the opposite extreme. Okay? But by the way, Alef Lamais, that's a really important question. You're on campus. Would you count in a minyan? Can I assume that, unfortunately, everyone who calls themselves conservative and reform are halakhically Jewish? It's a topic for later in the year. But if the answer is no, and statistically it unfortunately appears that often is the case, you understand we have minyan issues. Okay? Rav continues. Turn the page. The Rav, let's do number 5. Chamesh Drashos. Did everyone read this? This was one of, I don't know why, this is one of my favorite pieces of the Rav. This is the most readable piece of the Rav. Okay, this is basically a translation from Yiddish, which is also why it's a lot more readable, of the Rav's lectures to Mizrahi. It's all about what does it mean to be Mizrahi, i.e., before the term unorthodox, this was orthodox, modern, centrist, Zionistic. These are some of the best definitions or the best speeches the Rav gave about definitions without the big words and philosophy. Okay? So anyone that has not read this, it's also, he's got really great vorts. And the vort that I hope you read is as follows. We're talking about Akedat Yitzchak, and he invites Eliezer and Yishmael to come with him. Yes? And at some point, he turns to Eliezer and Yishmael, and he says, Shev lachem po machamor, v'ani v'anar nelcha, Nishtachaveh, and then we'll come back. You guys stay here with the Chamor. Right? Eliezer, Yishmael. Me and Yitzchak, we will go up to the holy mountain, we will daven and bow, and then we'll come back. Says the Rav, who needs these details? What message is it imparting? And the Rav here gives a really strong message. Because on the one hand, you understand from the Rav that Brit, right, the Brit of fate means all Jews are always part of Judaism. On the other hand, wait, we have the Brit of Sinai. But what do I do when people don't have both? How do I treat them? And the Rav develops in many of his writings the following model. We as Jews always stand together with fellow Jews when it comes to things that relate to Jews. Security, State of Israel, self-defense, Holocaust. I don't distinguish, right? Hitler didn't distinguish, we don't distinguish. But when it comes to religious practice, when it comes to going up to the holy mountain and serving God and bowing down, I got bad news. We belong on different mountains. We don't do the same thing. Everybody hear the distinction? So Yishmael and Eliezer, you're going to help me make this trek through the desert. But when it comes to me going up and bowing and davening, we don't do that together. I'm sorry. And the Rav has this beautiful depiction of how difficult it must have been for Avram to say that and how he tried to formulate that. But I got bad news. We are Jews, we stand together. But if you're not part of Brit Sinai, we don't daven together. I don't daven with you. You don't daven with me. You do it your way. I do it my way. As Jews, we stand together. So we talk about Israel. We're in political groups together. We talk about economics together. We talk about American politics together. We can talk about all sorts of things together. You want to talk about services? Already we've gone into interdenominational, or we're in interfaith dialogue. And we don't do that. You daven your way. We daven our way. Let's not talk about it. You want to try to create partnership stuff? Not our cup of tea. That's not halacha. Everyone knows the Rav's psak on Rosh Hashanah. Rav gave a tremendous psak. Rav's famous psak, one of the few psakim that everyone across the spectrum always quotes. If it's Rosh Hashanah and you're stuck somewhere and there's only one shul and that shul is a conservative shul with a shofar and a minyan, you know what you should do on Rosh Hashanah? Daven at home. We don't daven together. We don't mix and match. Apples and oranges don't go together. I'm sorry. I feel for you. I will do anything to support you. But we don't daven together. Halacha, you do it your way. I don't tell you what to do. We do halacha our way. Please don't tell us what to do. We'd love to create shalom. Let's create unity around neutral things, around social pieces, around national pieces. Halacha, leave aside. Now, just as a demonstration, you know, because there are lots of times in life we read a psak, but we don't get to see how they lived it. In the case of the Rav, I want to show you one of the most powerful places, and where hopefully we're going to be able to see the Rav living this. Everyone turn the page. Let's see. I would like to start off with, let's start off with page 8. Just for fun. The one that starts off on the top, it says Psak Din. Okay, I want to show you two pieces where the Rav lived this and paid a price for it. The first one is Psak Din. Can everyone see the Psak Din? What's the Psak Din? Anybody recognize the names on that Psak Din? Anyone recognize a name or two?
Ramosha
Feinstein is there. In fact, he was probably responsible for putting a lot of this together. Okay, we're in 1956. We are all the American great Rosh Yeshiva are coming together to create a ban on working, dealing with, talking to, working shul and shul hand in hand with non-Orthodox shuls. They want to put a band together. Can you please tell me, of all the great Rosh Yeshivot and rabbis at the time, there are two names that are missing on that list. Lubavitcher Rebbe is not there, and Reb Soloveitchik isn't there. Now I'm going to treat each one separately. Lubavitcher Rebbe wrote multiple letters explaining his position. We're going to leave that aside for a different day. The Rav was very clear. I know that all the Haredi Gdolim want me to sign it, but I can't, because we all share a destiny. And I want to work with a former conservative. Religion, no. But everything else, yes. How dare you cut them off? The Holocaust caught off enough of us. Don't do it again. And Rav Soloveitchik paid a price for not signing that. Historians, most of the students will tell you, at that point, Rav Soloveitchik was no longer welcome in the Haredi world. At that point, there was a divide. At that point, the Rav went from being invited to Agudat Yisrael to being only at Mizrahi. At that point, again, in the 60s, definitions and identities of modern Orthodoxy began. We're not Haredi, we're not conservative, we're separate. The Rav paid a dear price for not signing that ban. Okay, that's story one. Story two, turn the page. Let's get started. Everything in the next two pages is halavai. I could tell you this is me doing the work, but Rabbi J.J. Schachter, who is someone who has spent years studying the Rav, was never a student of his, a biographical student of him, who's now at YU and doing all sorts of things. At one point started the Maimonidean Foundation in Boston. This is from a lecture he gave. What do we have here? What do you have? We're on November 30th, 1959. The Rav gets a letter. What's the letter? Everyone see it? We're on page 9. Again, I want to see the Rav not just tell you what to do, but the Rav lives it. The Rav gets a letter, an invitation from a very dear friend. The Rav lives where? Boston, in the city of... Where in Boston? Boston, no?
Boston is...
Big city. Where is the Rav? Rav from Brookline. And a fellow rabbi in Brookline, of the Reform Temple, who the Rav has personal dealings with for 35 years. They are colleagues. They do lots of Holocaust nights together. Israel funds. There was, in fact, a really big piece in Boston about Shrita, against the Rav. The Rav was taken to court. This particular rabbi over here, Rabbi Shubo, stood at the Rav's side defending his character, his honesty, his integrity. We're talking about someone who worked with the Rav for 35 years. Everybody with me? Because sometimes we need to ask ourselves, what personal price do we pay for standing up for what we believe? He invites Rav Soloveitchik to be a guest of honor, a sponsor, put your sign up of your shul, a logo on our big thing. When we go ahead, and what are we doing here? Silver Jubilee of the synagogue and his 25-year association with it. There are lots of speakers coming. Dear Rav Soloveitchik, we've been such good friends. We've worked together for 35 years. My honor to have you come and talk and be part of the celebration. So far, so good? Bottom of the page. I have no idea how we have this. We have the telegraph that Rav Soloveitchik wrote in response. The Rav is first going to write a telegraph and then going to write a longer letter. Everyone read the telegraph on the bottom. For all those of you that have never met a telegraph, thank God, this is what they used to call WhatsApp. It just took a lot longer. Yeah? And it wouldn't get to you in the Beit Midrash. Yeah, what does it say? It
doesn't acknowledge
it. He tells them?
Congratulations.
Everyone understand? It's a congratulations? Just to be clear, would Rav Moshe write it like this?
Nope.
What would Rav Moshe write? How would Rav Moshe react?
He wouldn't have gotten the invitation.
First of all, he wouldn't have gotten the invitation. And if he had gotten the invitation, he would say...
Nothing.
Go away.
Not only nothing, thank you, I don't know who you are, and I maybe don't know who you are, and don't want to know who you are. I don't recognize your title as rabbi. I don't recognize that your temple is a temple, that it represents Judaism, and that it's a significant accomplishment. You've been around for 25 years. And, I kind of wish it wasn't true. Yes, everyone follow the difference in attitude? We already see in the Rav. We have appreciation. We have respect. Turn the page. What happens next? The Rav writes a real letter. Okay, I just want to hold this up. This is from the library. This is put together by Rabbi Nettie Helfgott, that some of you may know, from SIR, Frisch, etc. Very good friend of Rabbi Gremitz, and has been to the yeshiva and spoken many times. This is basically a list of really, really significant letters, very often about public policy or shul policy, that the Rav wrote to a number of people, edited and with introductions. Okay, so you see introduction to who this rabbi in Boston was over here. Yes, everyone see it? I'm on page 10. Yeah, can someone read it for me? But I want someone who can read it for me with some neshama. Yeah, go for it.
Sure.
Dear Mr. Fleischer.
Okay. Dear Mr. Fleischer.
Presumably the person in charge of organizing. Yeah.
Please excuse the delay in answering your letter. The reason for my not replying promptly was due to feeling of reluctance on my part to refuse and to serve as honorary sponsor of a testimonial dinner in honor of Rabbi and Mrs. Shubo, and also marking the occasion and dedication of the new Temple B'nai Moshe.
Stop here. What do we see from the Rav? What do you imagine was involved? Several months of debating this? Of agonizing over this? Rav Moshe's not agonizing over anything about this. And he, again, recognizes him as rabbi, dinner's in honor of him, and the Temple. Okay?
Frankly speaking, I was faced with a very unpleasant situation.
Just to be clear, today we're all, again, in universities, are going to go through this also. We're going to have to try to figure out how to describe halacha, how to describe our commitments in a truthful, honest way. We can take a lot of cues from the Rav. Again, language has changed in the 50 years since this was written. It's personal. It's about me. He's not blaming a halacha system, a book. He's saying, I'm uncomfortable. This is my degree of discomfort. And I'm going to share with you my story and where I am. I'm going to tell you how much I appreciate you. And yet explain to you why I can't do what I can do, and we can all take a lesson from this. Yeah.
On the one hand, I was eager to accept your invitation. I cherish my long association with Rabbi Shubo, and I consider him a dear and distinguished friend whom I hold in great esteem because of his many talents and fine qualities. It is self-evident that if the dinner were being given only in honor of Rabbi and Mrs. Shubo, I would consider it a privilege to serve as one of the sponsors. On the other hand, however, this reception, to my regret, will also serve as an occasion to celebrate the completion and dedication of the new temple. Let me say unequivocally that I do recognize the importance of this new house of worship for the Jewish population of Brighton as a means of communal organization and unification. I also appreciate the unselfish efforts on the part of the members and leaders which made such an undertaking possible. Their pride in having attained their goal is fully warranted. You in particular have manifested a strong sense of community awareness and devotion to Jewish causes for which you should be congratulated.
Again, the Rav is appreciating their work, okay? They are you know, overly appreciating, and it's positive. In other words, other denominations, their activities are halakhically significant. You know, I'd rather strong conservative reform communities than a weak and saying Kaddish. Keep going.
And all this does not justify my serving as a sponsor of a dinner at which the dedication of this temple will be celebrated, since the latter will, in all probability, have a mixed seating arrangement, which is, in my opinion, not in consonance with our time-honored law. The requirement for separate pews is almost a truism in our religious code, and I have neither the right nor the desire to sanction either by word or by silence a departure from this tradition.
Again, that depends on the person, who you are, and the community you're in, whether that does or doesn't apply. Needless to say, the Rav at this time felt this was a super important issue. Okay?
My presence at the celebration, or the appearance of my name as a sponsor, would be tantamount to tacit approval of mixed pews, a thing which would greatly disturb my conscience. Therefore, after I had given the matter considerable thought, I arrived at the unavoidable conclusion that my role in connection with this affair would prove to be absurd. And so I respectfully decline.
One last line.
I wish to impress upon you that my words are not to be interpreted in the sense of criticism or censure. I am not a preacher by nature, and I have never tried to convert others who are committed to a different philosophy to my viewpoint.
Okay, in other words, we're not forcing religion on you. And I think it's a really important piece the Rav is saying. This is not, I have personal feelings, and I have halakhic feelings, and I have to square them both and stand up for halakha. Right, whatever we feel doesn't beat everything in life, doesn't beat our commitments. But yet, I want you to know how I'm not preaching. I'm not telling you what to do. I'm not trying to change you. Again, very often, when we assert halakha, we often assert it in a way that we're telling you, you're wrong, what you're doing is wrong, and you should be more like me, because I know better and I'm better. Rav is very much not doing that. Again, there's a lot we can learn from this letter. Yeah, just finish it.
I write this letter with a sense of deep humility, explaining to you my feelings on the matter. I hope you realize and fully understand my position, and accept my hesitance in accepting an honor which would be in direct opposition to my own convictions.
Okay. I think it's a beautiful letter. And again, for me, what the Rav does is, again, he displays his commitment and the approach that I think modern Orthodoxy has embraced, and that is where Jewish peoplehood, and then there's Brit Sinai Halakha. When it comes to Jewish peoplehood, we are all one, we work together proudly. We join the Israeli Day Parade, and we all march together, big tent. Yet when it comes to halakhic issues, when it comes to shuls and temples, we deal, or kotels, we do things separately, okay? And that's just the way it is. Personally, communally, no difference, no distinctions. Give me 1 second. And the Rav lived that way, and I think for very much, Orthodoxy has continued along those paths. Again, there's a whole slew of issues that we need to talk about. How do we handle 27 different halakhic permutations of this? What is it like? And by the way, just to be clear, different communities, different campuses, different cultures, different continents might have different... Everything needs to be assessed, sometimes slightly different. And for this, you need a local rabbi that understands the balance. There might be differences in small communities, big communities. Depends who people are. There are way too many details to get to make really, really big, broad. But these are the biggest broad strokes I think we can make confidently. And there are hundreds of halakhic issues that apparently we will not have time to deal with. But I will take questions, and we'll take any questions from anyone personally. There's tons of issues about personal status, about mitzvot, about marriage, divorce, conversion, where this comes up. There are lots of community issues What about Kiddush that's being said Friday night, Havdalah, all these different things. If a woman gets right, if a woman gets up and makes Kiddush, Friday night. When I came into Penn, we had this the gabbais of the conservative community would alternate with us doing Havdalah. Lots of different stuff going on. What can be done, what can't be done. Individual basis, everything needs to be treated very, very differently, especially we're talking about different areas in New York City. In a dome in New York City, to pick some far-flung place in the middle of nowhere, or even a small place in New Jersey. Every different place is going to be slightly different on some of the details, and therefore we need local post-camp. But is everybody clear? These are our two broad strokes of how we handle things. I'm just going to end off with the Rav Lichtenstein. Rav Lichtenstein, if you saw it, should be on page 3 or 4, said basically, I don't understand. Can you give a Dvar Torah to a conservative reform shul? On the one hand, what does it mean about, are we giving credence, are we giving our legitimacy, or are we just teaching Torah? Right. I'll tell the story in college prep, but it took me 3 years to get up and give a Dvar Torah in the Reform Synagogue. In that particular case, I know why I didn't do it for 3 years, and I was very strong against not doing it, and I also know why I regretted not having done it earlier once I did it. But who's to say that that will apply in lots of other situations, and every situation might be different. Okay, I guess let me take questions, but those are really the two broad strokes. Later in the year, just to be clear, at the end of our year, we spend a lot of time doing what we call uni prep, college prep. One of the things that hopefully is one of the reasons that a lot of us come here and look forward to. This year, just the end of year's man is shorter than other years, so we're doing a lot of things this year earlier. But we'll get back to some of these issues later. Okay, I'll take a handful of questions. How about this? Only because I don't want to take people away from lunch. We'll call it here. I'll be here as long as I need to be, and you all know where to find me the rest of the week. I'll be more than happy to follow up on anything.